Imagine walking into a restaurant, sitting down and reading the very first item on the menu. But there's a catch.
There's always a catch.
Right. You have to order that first item immediately. You literally cannot read the rest of the menu because reading the rest of the menu takes an entire day.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds stressful.
It is. You just go with whatever sounded okay on a Tuesday morning. You order it and you eat it. You will never know if the third item down was the greatest meal of your life simply because you couldn't afford the time to look.
That is a brutally accurate analogy for software design.
I thought so too. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are cracking open a really fascinating developer's log from April 23rd, 2026.
Yeah, it's a great read.
This source document outlines how one solo developer managed to shatter a massive, incredibly frustrating creative bottleneck, something they call first instinct bias, and they did it using a highly specific AI pipeline.
It is a brilliant look into the modern solo developer's reality. To really understand the breakthrough we are exploring today, we have to start with the core problem highlighted in the source.
Yay.
They refer to it as the N equals one design quality ceiling.
The N equals one ceiling.
Exactly. For a solo developer, or even just a very small team, true design exploration is usually a luxury they just cannot afford.
Yeah.
Think about the traditional process, right? You have an idea for an app, you need a design, so you sketch something out.
Makes sense.
But to actually test if that design direction works, to feel the interaction, you have to build a functional prototype.
Which the developer notes takes about a full day of work per variant.
Right.
If you are working alone, you simply do not have the time to spend an entire week building five different prototypes just to see which one feels best in your hands.
And the consequence of that time scarcity is immense. You build your first idea, it exists, it functions, and because you have nothing to compare it against, you keep it.
Yeah, you just settle.
Exactly. That is the N equals one ceiling. The trap isn't a lack of engineering skill, it is a lack of sample size. You are essentially locked into your very first thought.
The source gives a perfect real-world example of this constraint. The developer was building an app called Ellen. It's designed as an inspiration and journal app for creators. And the developer was totally stuck.
Not on the features, though, right?
No, not at all. They knew exactly what the app needed to do under the hood. They were stuck on the vibe. Like when you open the app, what mood does it put you in?
Right.
Should it feel like a film darkroom? A private journal, maybe a gallery walk. They had all these distinct opinions, but absolutely zero ability to test them without burning weeks of runway.
Because in software development, testing equals prototyping, and prototyping equals lost time. You default to whatever your brain served up on day one.
Exactly.
What this developer discovered is a way to read that entire menu in a single afternoon. They broke the ceiling using a workflow built around something called Claude Design, generating six completely distinct theme directions in about 20 minutes.
Okay, let's unpack this because my immediate thought when I read Claude Design was to wonder if this is a totally separate, expensive, new software product I have to go buy, install, and learn from scratch.
Yeah, that is a super logical assumption, but the source clarifies this immediately. It is not a separate product at all.
Oh, really?
Nope. It is the exact same underlying AI model running in the same terminal session you would normally use for back-end coding. The fundamental difference lies in the skill stack that you load into the model's context.
So we are talking about the specific tools and directives the AI is allowed to reach for.
Precisely. Instead of loading up skills optimized for churning out massive blocks of functional logic,
Like database queries and
yeah,
stuff.
exactly, like a test-driven development workflow. Instead of that, it loads a specific set of design-focused skills. The document lists things like design consultation, front-end design, and this incredibly fascinating family of commands called the Impeccable series.
The impeccable star family. Yeah, the developer lists commands under this umbrella like animate, colorize, typeset, polish, and critique.
Right.
It sounds less like a coding assistant and more like a high-end design agency.
What's fascinating here is the underlying priority shift in the machine's processing. This specific skill library is tuned for taste, aesthetic cohesion, and brand expression rather than pure coding throughput.
Okay, so it actually cares how things look.
Very much so.
Yeah.
For instance, the impeccable colon typeset skill will actually force the AI to spend processing power thinking about letter tracking, line height, and font pairing.
Wow.
Yeah, a standard coding workflow would never waste token generation pondering the emotional weight of a Sylleaf font versus a sans-serif font. It just wants to render the text on the screen.
Just get it working.
Right, exactly. But this configuration pauses to care about the visual rhythm.
So how does a developer actually kick off this process? It all starts with the brief. And what struck me is how remarkably short the brief is. We are talking about a single paragraph.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, and no feature lists allowed. You don't say, I need a login screen, a hamburger menu, and a settings page. It has to be purely about mood, reference points, and trade-offs.
Because the AI already knows how to build a login screen.
Mm.
What it needs from you is the emotional guardrails.
Right.
For Elon, the brief they wrote was highly evocative. They wrote, inspiration or journal app for creators. Feel like a film, dark room, slow, intentional, tactile. Users develop entries like film. The opposite of Instagram's infinite scroll.
The opposite of Instagram's infinite scroll. I love that. By stating what it is not, you give the design intelligence a hard boundary to bounce off of.
Exactly.
And the source notes that if the AI needs more context after reading that paragraph, it is instructed to ask clarifying questions before writing a single line of code.
Once that brief is digested, the pipeline kicks into what we call the divergent phase.
Okay.
Based on that single paragraph, the system emits six entirely distinct theme or aesthetic directions presented as high-fidelity phone mock-ups.
And we should be clear, it is not just taking the exact same layout and making six variations of a blue button.
Oh, no, not at all. Every single one of the six directions has its own unique color palette, its own typography choices, its own spatial layout language, and distinct component styles.
But the mathematical reality of throwing six darts at the board like this is that half of them will probably be complete misses. Three of them will likely not fit your vision at all.
Oh, absolutely. But that variance is exactly what you are paying for with the compute time.
How so?
The variance forces you to see the contrast. If you only see one design, you have nothing to push back against.
Ah, I see.
Right. If you see six wildly different interpretations of film darkroom, suddenly you understand what visual elements actually matter to you.
Yeah.
You see a high-contrast dark version next to a soft, sepia-toned light version, and you immediately realize, it absolutely has to be dark.
And you couldn't have known that with absolute certainty without seeing both rendered out in front of you. So you have diverged. You have these six wild ideas sitting on your screen. Now, the human developer has to start reining it in. The next phase is converging those six options down to three, accompanied by a deep analytical breakdown.
Right. The AI evaluates the six, selects the strongest three that best map to the original brief, and then it actually writes out a rigorous analysis of each.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it breaks down why the font pairing works, how the interaction language functions, and most importantly, the specific trade-offs of choosing that direction.
The developer notes this one phase saved them roughly 2 weeks of agonizing trial and error.
Easily.
When you have three competing directions, each with its own distinct voice and a written rationale, you are forced to articulate why one is fundamentally better suited for your users than the others.
Right.
But, and this is a massive limitation, the source is very upfront about the AI cannot make the final choice.
It absolutely cannot. It can widen the search space, it can narrow six to three, but picking the final winner, that requires taste. And as the developer emphatically points out, taste is entirely yours to exercise.
The three finalists for Elon were so evocative. We had Field Notes, which leaned heavily into a rugged travel journal aesthetic.
Nice.
We had Chiaroscuro, which is all about stark light emerging from deep shadows. And finally, Film Stock, which was a dark, moody, film noir aesthetic utilizing typewriter fonts and warm reds.
Three very valid, structurally sound interpretations of that darkroom brief.
Yeah, they really were. But the human developer has to sit there and make the call. They ultimately chose Film Stock. Not just because it looked cool on a mock-up, but because it matched the brief the most literally, and more importantly, the underlying design metaphor extended naturally.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a design metaphor is only as powerful as its durability.
What do you mean by durability?
Well, if your app feels like an immersive darkroom on the home screen, but suddenly feels like a generic, off-the-shelf corporate spreadsheet on the settings page, the illusion shatters.
Ooh, right.
The user's emotional connection to the software completely breaks down.
Which is exactly why you have to stress test the metaphor. You take that one winning direction film stock and you expand it across many, many different screens.
Yes.
Reading this, my immediate thought was, but what happens if your brilliant metaphor completely breaks down by screen seven? Like, what does a film darkroom empty state look like? What does a film darkroom server error page look like?
Finding that out early is the entire point of the direction study. If the metaphor breaks at screen seven, you desperately want to find out during the mock-up phase rather than 3 weeks into writing production React code.
The way the AI resolved those edge cases for Elan was incredibly elegant. The settings page didn't just say settings. The UI treated them as development preferences, like adjusting ISO and exposure.
Yeah, it's so clever.
Isn't it? And the empty states where a user hasn't created any journal entries yet, those became undeveloped roles shoot something today.
My personal favorite resolution in the study was how it handled error states.
Yes, that was amazing. If the app couldn't connect to the database, it wasn't just a generic error 404 pop-up. The error state was visually styled as a light leak, a streak of red across the dark UI, telling the user this role was damaged.
It's just brilliant. It turns a fundamentally frustrating user experience into an immersive piece of world building.
Completely.
That level of structural cohesion is what separates a disposable app from an unforgettable one. And once you have achieved that cohesion across all your edge cases, you have to lock it in so the actual coding can begin.
Here's where it gets really interesting, especially from an engineering perspective. To transition from design to development, the pipeline introduces a single file called handoff.md.
The ultimate, unshakable source of truth for the rest of the project.
Wait, let me push back on this. We've all seen traditional design handoffs where a designer just drops a link to a massive Figma file filled with hundreds of artboards, and the developer has to somehow translate those vector pictures into functioning code.
Yeah, the classic nightmare.
Exactly. So how does a text-based markdown file replace a visual canvas?
It replaces it by formalizing the visual language into strict constraints. Handoff.md captures the entire design system mathematically.
Mathematically?
Yes. We are talking specific typography scales, exact hexadecimal color tokens, component behavior states, motion curve rules, and spatial layout constraints for every single screen. It sits right there alongside a folder of reference screens coded as basic React components.
So it's not a picture of a button. It is a documented rule of how a button must behave, what color it is in hover state, and how many pixels of padding it requires.
Exactly.
And crucially, this markdown file lives right inside the code repository. It gets versioned with your software. It is inherently machine readable.
And machine readable is the foundation of the next phase. Because once handoff.md is locked in your repository, the implementation phase begins and the human developer steps back.
They hand the heavy lifting over to a custom AI agent they call Big Task.
Let's walk through how Big Task actually operates. When the developer opens a terminal session, the agent runs an environment check. It detects three critical things.
Okay, what are they?
The UI components directory, the handoff.md reference file, and Playwright in the dependencies.
Now, for those who don't know, Playwright is a standard testing framework that can boot up a browser and take automated screenshots of web pages.
Right. When Big Task sees those three elements coexisting, it automatically routes its own behavior to a specific iProject profile. It skips all the usual conversational planning ceremonies and goes straight into sub-agent-driven development, building out the components to match the rules.
But generating the code is only half the battle. The verification sweep is where the process becomes truly rigorous.
Because the system has the handoff.md rules and the visual reference components, it mandates a strict visual audit of its own work. Step one, the pipeline automatically boots up a local development server. Step two, Playwright drives a headless browser and takes a high-resolution screenshot of every single changed route, multiplied by every theme variant.
So for Elan, which had 12 distinct routes and two themes, light mode and dark mode, that generates 24 PNG images.
Yep.
Now, if I'm the developer, if the AI is generating the code and then the AI is checking its own work, mm-hmm. Isn't that just grading its own homework? How do we know it's not just stamping approved on a broken layout?
That is a crucial challenge, and it is solved through architectural separation.
What does that mean?
Well, the main AI thread that wrote the code doesn't evaluate the images. It dispatches a swarm of independent parallel subagents. Each individual subagent is isolated. It is handed one single screenshot and the handoff.md spec and given one job, objectively compare the rendered pixels against the mathematical rules.
So how does an AI actually compare a visual PNG picture to a text-based markdown document?
These are multimodal vision language models. They can interpret the spatial rendering of the PNG.
Like they can actually see the image.
Yeah, recognizing that a header text is currently rendering at 24 pixels from the edge, for instance, and cross-reference that spatial math against the constraint in the markdown file, which might dictate a 32-pixel padding token.
Wow. And the developer notes they do this incredibly efficiently in under 200 tokens. That means this check isn't a long philosophical conversation. It is an incredibly cheap, blazing fast micro decision.
Very fast.
The main thread then aggregates all these individual subagent reports into a giant verification matrix. Every single route gets graded, pass, flag, or BLOC.
A BLOC means the rendered UI is fundamentally broken. Maybe a component failed to load entirely. The system automatically opens a fixed task, and the main agent attempts to repair the code before bothering the human.
Okay, that makes sense.
A flag means the page loaded, but the visual math is off, and it surfaces an incredibly specific concern. It won't just say, "This looks weird." It will say, "The hexadecimal color on the primary submit button in dark mode does not match the secondary brand token defined in the spec." Or, "The spacing between these two list items is violating the 8-pixel grid rule."
And finally, a pass means the rendered code perfectly aligns with the design contract.
Yes.
I want to highlight why this specific mechanism is so vital. If you ask a standard language model, "Does this website look good?" it is notoriously sycophantic.
Oh, completely. It wants to please the user, so its default state is to tell you, "Yes, your design is wonderful." Subjective prompts yield totally useless validation.
But this pipeline forces a fundamentally different question. Does this layout exactly match the reference document?
It shifts the prompt from a subjective aesthetic judgment to an objective, verifiable comparison.
Yeah.
And when framed objectively, vision models are shockingly rigorous.
Yeah.
If a border radius is slightly too sharp, they will flag it without hesitation. It functions as a tireless, automated quality assurance team working in parallel.
So what does this all mean? Let's zoom out and summarize the core strengths and weaknesses of this Claude design pipeline, exactly as the source developer sees it.
Good idea.
On the strength side, number one is undoubtedly widening the search space early. Going from one idea to six distinct ideas in 20 minutes is the cheapest, most high-leverage win in the entire software lifecycle.
The second major strength is visual coherence. Once you lock in a direction, the pipeline's strict reliance on the handoff.md file ensures that every subsequent screen belongs to that identical theme. You eliminate stylistic drift, where an app slowly starts looking like a completely different product by the time you reach the deeper menus.
Right. Third is the machine-readable handoff itself. Getting the design spec out of proprietary visual tools and into a version-controlled, text-based format living right next to the code is a massive workflow improvement.
Huge.
And fourth is that final polish layer. Those impeccable skills handling the final 20%, the font tracking, the micro animations, the subtle details a solo developer usually ignores just to get the product shipped.
But the source document is equally transparent about the system's weaknesses. The most prominent one is the inability to make the final choice. The machine can analyze trade-offs, but you still must possess the human taste to select the winner.
It is also not going to invent a genuinely novel aesthetic.
No, it's not. This raises an important question about the limits of current AI. The pipeline is effectively rearranging and recombining the vast design space it observed in its training data.
Makes sense.
It can blend styles, it can refine them with incredible precision, but it is not going to invent the next radical, unprecedented visual movement in user interface design. If your goal is to build something completely avant-garde that breaks all known conventions, you still need to hire a brilliant human designer.
And finally, the output quality is entirely dependent on the quality of your brief. Garbage in, garbage out. If you give the system a vague directive like, "Make it look nice," you are just going to get six perfectly coded variations of boring, generic, nice.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
It requires a strong, opinionated point of view to generate strong options.
Which brings us to the ultimate return on investment for you, the listener. The developer summarizes the economics of this workflow perfectly.
Let's hear it.
If you can force yourself to spend just 20 minutes writing a thoughtful, vibe-driven brief beat, really articulating what the product should feel like and what it should not be,
you will get 20 hours of your life back. The time saved by not building prototype after prototype, the absolute relief of automating the visual QA matrix, it fundamentally changes what a single person can accomplish.
It really does.
You suddenly wield the design exploration capabilities of a mid-sized digital agency right from your laptop.
It completely removes the time penalty for curiosity and exploration.
It really does. You can afford to look at the whole menu. But reading through this developer's log left me with one final kind of provocative thought to mull over. We've talked extensively about how the AI cannot make the final choice. The developer insists that taste is entirely yours to exercise. Taste belongs to the human.
The entire pipeline relies on your human judgment at the convergent phase to pick the winner.
Right. But if AI is now perfectly capable of rapidly combining all these known aesthetics to break our first instinct bias, and it clearly understands the mathematical relationships between colors, fonts, and layouts well enough to build a remarkably cohesive film darkroom metaphor,
where does that trajectory lead?
It makes me wonder about ourselves.
Yeah.
How long until our own highly prized, uniquely human taste is recognized as just another algorithm?
Oh, that's deep.
I mean, really, isn't my taste just a biological output generated from my own lifetime of varied visual inputs? I like the high contrast darkroom aesthetic because I watched certain noir films in my 20s, or I absorbed the layout of certain indie magazines.
Right, you're just drawing from your own training data.
Exactly. If my human taste is just a biological database of accumulated references, how long until an AI can accurately predict which of the three finalists I'm going to choose before I even see them on the screen?
It challenges the very nature of creative intuition. If our aesthetic preferences are truly just the sum of our experiences, mapped out like a predictable matrix of learned associations, then the line between human creative intuition and machine calculation is going to become very, very blurry.
A little unnerving, but totally fascinating to think about. We will leave you to chew on that one. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring the whole menu.